Chapter 37. New York. If you hadn't levied the assessment, you would have been in a close place, I judge. Close? Have you figured up the total of the disbursements I told you of? No, I didn't think of that. Well, let's see. Spent in Washington, say, $191,000 printing, advertising, etc., say. $118,000 charity, say, $16,000, total, $325,000, the money to do that with, comes from appropriation, $200,000, 10%. Assessment on capital of $1,000,000,000. $100,000, total, $300,000, which leaves us in debt some $25,000,000 at this moment. Salaries of home officers are still going on, also printing and advertising. Next month will show a state of things. And then burst up, I suppose? By no means. Levy another assessment, oh, I see. That's dismal. By no means. Why isn't it? What's the road out? Another appropriation, don't you see? Bother the appropriations. They cost more than they come to. Not the next one. We'll call for $500,000, get it, and go for $1,000,000 the very next month. S, but the cost of it. The president smiled and patted his secret letters affectionately. He said, all these people are in the next Congress. We shan't have to pay them a cent. And what is more, they will work like beavers for us. Perhaps it might be to their advantage. Harry reflected profoundly a while. Then he said, we send many missionaries to lift up the benighted races of other lands. How much cheaper and better it would be if those people could only come here and drink of our civilization at its fountainhead. I perfectly agree with yon, Mr. Beverly. Must you go? Well, good morning. Look in when you are passing, and whenever I can give you any information about our affairs and prospects, I shall be glad to do it. Harry's letter was not a long one, but it contained at least the calamitous figures that came out in the above conversation. The colonel found himself in a rather uncomfortable place. No $1,200 salary forthcoming, and himself held responsible for half of the $9,640 due the workmen, to say nothing of being in debt to the company to the extent of nearly $4,000. Polly's heart was nearly broken. The loser returned in fearful force, and as he had to go out of the room to hide the tears that nothing could keep back now. There was mourning in another quarter too, for Louis had a letter. Washington had refused, at the last moment, to take $40,000 for the Tennessee land, and had demanded $150,000. So the trade fell through, and now Washington was wailing, because he had been so foolish. But he wrote that his man might probably return to the city soon, and then he meant to sell to him, sure, even if he had to take $10,000. Louis had a good cry, several of them, indeed, and the family charitably forbore to make any comments that would increase her grief. Spring blossomed, summer came, dragged its hot weeks by, and the colonel's spirits rose, day by day, for the railroad was making good progress. But by and by something happened. Hawkeye had always declined to subscribe anything toward the railway, imagining that her large business would be a sufficient compulsory influence. But now Hawkeye was frightened. And before Colonel Sellers knew what he was about, Hawkeye, in a panic, had rushed to the front and subscribed such a sum that Napoleon's attraction suddenly sank into insignificance, and the railroad concluded to follow a comparatively straight course instead of going miles out of its way to build up a metropolis in the muddy desert of Stone's Landing. The thunderbolt fell. After all the Colonel's deep planning, after all his brain work and tongue work in drawing public attention to his pet project and enlisting interest in it, After all his faithful hard toil with his hands, and running hither and thither on his busy feet, after all his high hopes and splendid prophecies, the fates had turned their backs on him at last, and all in a moment his air castles crumbled to ruins aboard him. Hawkeye rose from her fright triumphant and rejoicing, and down went Stone's Landing. One by one its meager parcel of inhabitants packed up and moved away, as the summer waned and fall approached. Town lots were no longer saleable, traffic ceased, a deadly lethargy fell upon the place once more, the Eagle Telegraph faded into an early grave, the wary tadpole returned from exile, the bullfrog resumed his ancient song, the tranquil turtle sunned his back upon bank and log, and drowsed his grateful life away as in the old sweet days of yore. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.